Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna.
Live from Latitude 30.
Jaguars This Week.
With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman. Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher. And some guy named Tony Boselli.
Who? Inconceivable!
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Let the deliberations begin.
You can't handle the truth.
Here's Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome inside Latitude 30 on the south side, right across from the Avenues Mall. 2 hours of Jaguars football, and guys, I don't know what the last few days have been like for you, but all I keep getting is I can't wait to tune in on Wednesday night and hear what Tony and Jeff have to say about that one.
You know, I'm so glad that the collective bargaining agreement requires them to get 4 consecutive days off. Because, you know, yesterday I had a self-imposed day off after getting a few things done early on. And it was so nice just to kind of to get away from the conversation of the Jaguars. Because, you know, fans aren't happy and you understand it.
Nor should they.
No. And so, I mean, for me, the yesterday's day off, you know what I did yesterday? Went out and went to a shooting range and then hit some golf balls.
You hit golf balls?
I did. Down the shooting range.
Perfect. I was like, you're
what'd you hit them with? The 40 caliber?
No. We were checking a few guns, just making sure they were sighted in. And it's down at my friend's farm. And, you know, it's got a big, long straightaway at the shooting range. And it goes out to like 500 yards. And he had his golf clubs in the back of his pickup. And I said, you got any balls? And he said, yeah. So we had a long drive contest and the closest to the pin at the different targets out to 500 yards. It was
awesome.
Did you win? No, I'm terrible at golf.
Yeah, but I've seen you hit a golf club before. You hit it a long way.
I swing hard, but I just don't know what zip code.
Right.
But it was just, I mean, that day was so nice because the conversation wasn't about the Jaguars, and the players need that to just get away and then refresh not only the body but also refresh the mind, because right now they're not a good football team.
You have any days off coming up, Jeff?
Yes, I do.
I'll forward you some emails. How about that?
No, thank you.
I was going to say, I don't have any days off.
John, you got to get away from it, huh? I mean, your email inbox has got to be a vicious place to reside these days.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the gig, but it's not pretty. I'm not going to sit here and say that.
So where do you want to start with this conversation tonight? Because, I mean, it's not pretty. They're not a good football team. I can't even recall what you said when you walked up, Tony, but we're all sitting here trying to explain.
Well, I think a lot of people want to know why. You know, what's wrong with this football team?
And
I think that we need to give, you know, our honest, you know, opinion as far as why they're not a good football team.
Well, you want to start where Gene Smith started today?
Sure.
He said talent, right? They need more talent.
Well, that is a hard pill to swallow, I think, mm-hmm. because as you look at the situation, the beautiful thing about the NFL is the way the system is set up with the draft, where the teams with the worst records draft the highest, which we have been in the top 10 now 4 straight years?
Yes.
4 straight years, and really 5 if you count us trading up to get Derek Harvey, which was a terrible trade, but we were up in the top 10 that year as well.
Right, so they've picked in the top 10
5 straight years.
In some capacity.
In some capacity.
Trading to get there.
On top of that, that's how the NFL is set up to create parity through the draft. But then also you have free agency where everybody has the exact same amount of money to spend in the free agent market. And every year those players are all available for open season, basically. And so all 4 of us love Gene. I mean, friends of ours, I've known him since 1995.
One of the hardest working men I know.
Yep. I mean, I respect him immensely. But when you hear the GM say that, it's hard for the fans because you now say, well, wait a second. What have we been doing for the last 4 years and beyond that we sit here after 5 games saying we don't have enough talent? And that is a tough pill to swallow, for the fan base.
I think also, too, that the hard thing for a lot of people is that, you know, last year this was a team that ran the ball as good as any in the National Football League, and it was
great defense.
A team that played great defense, And I know that they were patchwork at the end. And, look, I even made the comment that I didn't believe that they were truly a sixth-ranked defense in the National Football League, because I think a lot of teams played them conservatively because they knew that their offense could not generate a lot of points. And so the opponents had probably a game plan that was a little bit closer to the vest. So,
but that said, Jeff.
But they were still
there a was
good
a
defense.
Stretch, starting with Pittsburgh at halftime. You had the Baltimore game. There was a significant stretch where, you know, and my readers get tired of hearing it, they passed the eye test. They weren't a top six defense, but they were good enough to allow a functioning offense to have competed.
They were a top 10 defense.
Right. And they were good. They were certainly better than they are this year, and they were certainly good enough that had the offense been functional last year, that defense would have kept you in games, which is what NFL defenses are paid to do.
And so the frustrating part, you fast forward a year from a year later where we sit today, is you now have a defense that is struggling to stop people, and you still have the same passing numbers. The pass offense has not gotten visibly better or taken that step.
It's shown some flashes.
But I think it has not been
consistent.
But not enough to matter.
If you look at the overall numbers, I think we're right where we were last year or below.
Right.
And then the run game has gone backwards the last few weeks. So you sit here and say, what is the solution? Before you can figure out what the solution is, what's the problem? And you go back to Gene's comments today of saying we don't have enough talent or we need more talent. I think that's where frustration sets in at a high level.
Well, and I think the other thing, though, is that they need more talent, which, yes, I understand that. But they also need more production out of the talent that they have.
That's where I was going. Because when you look at Terrence Knighton, who played well last year, right, Logs, you'd agree?
At times.
I mean, at times, yeah.
But enough that
Terrence has never been very consistent.
But enough that Gene Smith said, look, you come in good shape, and you've got a monster contract that you can work towards.
Well, it's a contract year for Terrence, and I'm not trying to just single Terrence out, but Terrence is a guy that is capable of dominance. And when you have a defense that is missing some of the components that they had last year that helped make them pretty good, you know, a Clint Session, a Darryl Smith, you know, when you don't have those type of guys, somebody else has got to kind of step up their game. And I don't think that you could say that Terrence is playing better now than all the way back to his rookie season.
Okay, no, I don't think he is.
He's not starting.
Yeah, and
clear.
I think you've all talked about it. Here's the interesting part, and Tony and I were talking about it before the show started, and that is he came in the best shape of his career, right? Of course, he couldn't work out with the team all offseason because of the eye injury, but he came in, you know, right around 330 pounds, and had the motivation of a contract year, and Gene Smith had told him, we need you to be a part of this thing, we need you to be an anchor, and he's not even starting now.
Well, for
maybe he should gain more weight.
For the defense.
You think?
Well, I mean.
He could come sit next to you here at 2:30.
For the defense, you know, to me the performance or lack of performance is, you know, when I say, you know, you need more production out of the talent that you have, he's capable of more than that's frustrating. Tyson Alualu he looks like he's hurt. And is he a liability? No. Has he gotten better since his rookie year? No. And you can tell that he's hurt. You know, knee or
Jeff,
something's going on with him. He doesn't move like
this,
he
Jeff,
used to.
Because and I think we can go down the whole roster and make examples in a lot of places, but don't you get this sense, whether it's offense or defense, because Tyson made me think of it, because we talked about this last week. I think Tyson, I stand by what I said last week, first and second down, good run player. He is a guy that you can
– But he's been better.
I agree with that. But this is – you drafted him to be an impact player. And what this team right now, and we heard the players say it in the locker room, we need to make more plays. You need more impact players.
Well,
you need more guys that change – the direction of a game.
And that's sort of code for that. When you say you need more guys who make plays, you know, right now, after five games, they don't have any. Now, they've got guys who can, but
you have to
if you are what your record says you are, right now they haven't done any of that.
Look at every good team.
Sure.
In the NFL, they have three or four on each side of the ball that are impact players, mm-hmm. that are game changers, that can make plays that change the direction or the course of a game. Can eat up big yardage.
The good teams do,
but
not every team.
Not every team, but I mean,
yeah, the good teams
I'll say the top half.
Yeah, I mean maybe, but
most of the good teams. I mean,
but the good teams, the good defenses. You're right; they have three or four players that make impactful plays.
That's my, yeah, I'm not saying they're all pro, but they're guys that line up and you account for because you know sometimes
J.J. Watt, Antonio Smith, Brian Cushing, Jonathan Joseph.
I mean, you go down. I mean, they got
Kareem Jackson.
You know,
Barrett
Reed's a guy who can show up and make plays. Connor Barwin at 11. Connor Barwin had 11 sacks last. I mean, that's one of the best teams in the NFL, and they have a number.
That's why I brought him up.
And then the other side of the ball, you have Arian Foster, you have Matt Schaub, you have Owen Daniels.
Well, we're talking about one of the elite teams.
That's what I'm saying.
Well,
that's
why I'm trying to set the standard.
And for the Jaguars, I mean, just staying on that defensive side of the ball, we've seen Mincy at times show plays last year. And this year. I think Jeremy's performance has dropped. I think his worst game was this past week. You know, and that's not the way it's supposed to be. I mean, you expect him to get better. But
especially, Jeff, because you told us, and I agree, those offensive tackles aren't very good.
They weren't very good. They weren't very good players.
Not a good football player.
You know, so his performance has gone down. Terrence Knighton still hasn't elevated, you know, his performance. You know, and let's be realistic. Kyle Bosworth is Kyle Bosworth.
He's a special teams guy.
I mean, Darryl Smith is
the fifth or sixth
sorely
linebacker.
Missed for this defense. And
without Darryl Smith, you've basically got right now Derek Cox and Paul Posluszny, who you could argue are playing at a high level.
I'm not sure
anybody else did.
Yeah, right now that's about it.
Well, now the two safeties are playing fine. Too.
Solid.
Fine.
Solid.
They're playing soft football.
Although Dwight Lowry is going to be out for a couple
of weeks.
No, I understand,
but my point is you're looking – we just mentioned four guys on that are playing good football. Where's the great football? Where's the impact? Now, if other guys step up, those good players might be able to even do more because they, you know, the collective effort helps.
Well, I guess the question then, going back to the talent level, are there guys on this defense that you think in the last 11 weeks of the year can play at a significantly higher level?
I believe, and then one thing I wanted to add here, C.J. Mosley is playing hard. Hard. Love it. Okay, I love him. I love the way he plays the game. Jeremy Mincy can certainly play better. Terrence Knighton can play better at the linebacking core. Russell Allen is capable of better. Rasheen Mathis, I expect to get better. I mean, people are always wanting to cut Rasheen Mathis. I get it all the time. And people forget that Rasheen, for considering where he's at, coming back from a major knee reconstruction, that's pretty good.
All right, we need a break. We've got a whole lot more time and a whole lot more to discuss. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, and we're live at the away game headquarters of the Jaguars, Latitude 30 on Jacksonville Southside, right across from the Avenues Mall. Joe?
Thank you, Brian. The Jaguars Rewards Program is now better than ever. Season ticket owners get all the great premium benefits like Teal Deals and the Gate Gas Redemption Program, but it's now open to all Jaguars fans. Get great discounts, cash back, and register to win a trip to the Super Bowl. Visit Jaguars.com and click on the Jaguars Rewards logo to start earning your rewards today. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, rolls on live from Latitude 30. Come on by and see us. We're here at the 8 o'clock on Jaguars Radio. Well, the 18th annual Junior War production for girls aged 6 to 17 going to have camp days November 10th, 17th, and 24th. From 2 to 4:30 p.m., it all leads up to a halftime performance on November 25th. Girls will get a uniform, palms, T-shirt, commemorative DVD. Registration ends Friday, October 26th. Need more info? Just go to Jaguars.com, click on Cheerleaders, and then Junior Roar.
How about I go through the list of nuggets from Jaguars General Manager Gene Smith, courtesy of Mark Long from the Associated Press. Via tweet, the first one obviously was team needs more talent. Number two was wide receiver Cecil Shorts will be more involved. Number three is pass rush is a top concern. Number four, the defense will play better when Darryl Smith returns. Team needs to feed wide receiver Justin Blackmon like the Bengals and Bears did their number one guy. Number six, Britton played much better last week. Number seven, so did Aaron Ross. Number eight, C.J. Mosley outplaying Terrence Knighton. Number nine, zero chance of trading Maurice Jones-Drew. And the final one, an injury settlement coming for Zach Miller. The Jaguars would consider bringing him back if healthy. And then finally, this one is that Kevin Elliott and Antoine Blake are legit gunners. And Mike Mularkey said, those two guys are playing lights out on special teams.
They are good. I mean, there's no doubt that those two at the gunner position, it's pretty neat, too, because they both get there by different ways. Antoine Blake, super fast. And then you got Kevin Elliott, who's just a physical pounder. You know, he doesn't have great speed, but he's got good speed, and they've been very good for Brian Anger, and that's one of the reasons why Brian Anger is number three in the National Football League in net average.
So where do you want to go with this now?
I'm not sure how much more you can feed Justin. I'm not sure how many catches he has, but he has a lot of targets. It's not that they're not trying to get him the ball. I'm not sure exactly why it's not, but he had some drops early. They're throwing the ball the last couple of weeks. I don't think there's a problem with not knowing he's on the field.
Well, let's go to the quarterback.
What do you mean? Say that again. There's a problem with what?
No, I don't think there's a problem with not knowing he's on the field. I mean,
right. Right. And I think
early on, people were like, you got to throw him the ball more. He's been targeted a lot. They are trying to get him the ball.
And I think he needs to know exactly where he needs to be.
Right.
I mean, that's part of it. You know, obviously we had a couple errant throws / turnovers this past game, and I don't know the exact responsibility of who that's on, but I think Justin is not exactly sure at times where he's supposed to be, and I think Mike Mularkey talked about that today and said, and I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but Justin needs to figure out exactly where he needs to be, and I think some of those targets will turn into catches.
He said as much on his radio show Monday night.
So, you know, but and is he a guy that, you know, would you would say, okay, you need to get him the ball like A.J. Green or Brandon Marshall?
Not yet.
He's not
ready. He might become that.
He's not ready for that. You know, maybe down the road he may be ready for that. But, you know, much like we talked about with the defense, you know, they have talent, certainly, that needs more production out of the talent that they have on the offensive side of the ball as well. And at the receiving position. You know, with LaRon Robinson having missed basically the last three games, because that's what it's been, with the two head injuries that he had and then inactive completely last week.
Has he passed the concussion?
No, he's still in the program.
And
it sounds like Cecil Shorts will probably start over him in Oakland. That's not set in stone, but that's the way it sounded when Mike talked about it today.
And we saw Mike Thomas kind of fill that role a little bit. I don't know what's going on with that. You know, the whole relationship with Mike and Blaine, it's just, you know, in the preseason, you know, we saw everything leading up to the games, and before the games we were like, man, where's Mike Thomas? And all of a sudden the games came around, we were like, all right. And
there's been none of that.
And really,
it's striking.
Yeah, there hasn't been anything with Mike. With Cecil, I mean, what is he averaging, over 20 yards a catch? I mean, but it's been too infrequent. What is it, 8 catches?
Mm-hmm. 8 catches for 205, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, if somebody's got 8 catches for 205, I'm going to try to get him the ball more.
So feed Cecil, which is essentially what Gene said in his second point from
sure.
today.
Sure, sure.
That,
you know, it's a bottom-line business. You know, when you produce, you got to play those guys. You know, and if the guys aren't producing, much like with Terrence and CJ, if one guy's not producing, give the other guy a shot. I mean, that's where you're at. When you're 1-4, that's where you're at. It's a bottom-line business. Show me the production. If you don't show me the production, you go to the back of the line. And I think that with Austin Lane getting healthy, I think we're seeing the same thing with Andre Branch. You know, Andre Branch showed flashes in the preseason. John was very excited about him, and I kind of got excited about him at the end of the preseason, but I was still kind of hesitant because, you know, I think I said I was ready to give you guys a speeding ticket. But then his production hasn't been there.
He's had one game where we really talked about him, and that was the Colts game where he missed the
sack. And he's shown – he's much like them as a team in that you see flashes but no consistency.
I didn't even see flashes the last 2 weeks.
You haven't seen flashes?
The last 2 weeks, no.
Well, he caused the interception
against the Bears.
Oh, you're right. Okay, first play of the
Bears,
game.
You know, so, I mean.
Okay, outside of that.
There's a few plays, but he showed more flashes.
Preseason, I was the biggest advocate. I was with John saying, man, this guy is going to be a very productive defensive end for a rookie. I think I said he's a guy I could see getting 6 to 8 sacks and being a very good rookie defensive end. It's a hard position to come in and make impact plays right away. The disappointing thing to me, Jeff, is I don't see him getting off blocks. And in the run game, it almost is a liability because he's not getting off. He's not holding the point real well.
Well, that was said to be the big knock on him in college.
I know, yeah, but we saw that he was capable of it.
It didn't look like it.
In preseason, the guy held the point. He got off blocks. He beat offensive tackles. He made plays.
I'll be curious to see how he does coming off the bye. A lot of times, that position more than any other, it can improve in the second half of the season.
I agree.
So maybe he comes back off the bye, showing a little more. But, yeah, I mean, he's – I don't necessarily think you depend on rookie defensive ends. But he hasn't done much.
All right. We have hit the bottom of the first hour, and that means, Joe, you're going to send us to break.
Yes, I will, Brian. When you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. Six Jacksonville locations, Stein Mart, more fashion, less price. Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, rolls on Jaguars Radio. Well, you could be driving a brand-new Kia Optima. Yes, I'm talking to you, J.P. Shadry. All you got to do is register to win Conn's Kia. Stop by Southside Kia or Kia of Orange Park for your chance to win.
All right, welcome back. Jaguars this week live from the official away game headquarters of the Jaguars. Latitude 30 across from the Avenues Mall right there, just south of 95 on US 1. And we are here every Wednesday night from 6 o'clock until 8. And so we can spend the rest of the show talking about the quarterback, don't you think?
I mean, you really could.
You could.
I mean, you really could. I mean, that's you know, and it's an honest, you know, debate. I mean, right now, you want to see more development sooner rather than later. You know, we were just talking during the break there, and that, you know, there's a lot of quarterbacks, not a lot, but there's been some quarterbacks that it takes time. And Blaine is 22, and I think before the game, I said this to you, Brian and John, was that, you know, you want to see a game from Blaine where you go, yeah. You know, because we kind of saw a game at Minnesota where we were like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then kind of since then, it's been
Well, since then, it's been a lot of what we saw the other day, which was there were three or four plays in the second half where you were thinking, okay, is this it?
In the first half.
I'm sorry, in the first half.
And the second half was nothing.
No. Three third down conversion. I mean,
right.
for a 6 or 7 minute period, he looked like an NFL quarterback.
The hard thing is, and Jeff said it, alluded to it, you want to see glimpses, a game.
Well, I was going to say, we've seen glimpses.
You want to start to see a game. So in what he's fighting against in recent history of quarterbacks that have been chosen, they have immediately come out and had big games.
Right.
And they've had immediate success. And we now are a year and four games into it, and Blaine, I think, has 4 200-yard passing games in a league that is built on passing.
Right.
And the fans get frustrated, and you try to evaluate, and you want to be patient because Jeff's right. He's only 22. He came out of a spread offense. All the things that we have talked about.
Right.
But then the fans go, wait a second. Ryan Tannehill was playing quarterback 18 games ago in college, and he just threw for 438 yards. Against the Arizona Cardinals, one of the better defenses in the league, and have had glimpses in big games and is doing it with pretty much average receivers. I mean, so all the arguments that we talk about.
Sure. It's a little early on Tannehill, though, I think, because he's only started a few games. I mean, what if he tanks it over the second half of the season?
I agree. But you could say the same thing last year. Cam Newton had a huge year. He's struggling this year.
I'll give you one.
But my point is, going to the thing where you want to see a game or two where you sit back and you watch Blaine throw for 330 yards, even if you lose, you're like, wow, that is what we need.
No one's going to argue that. I mean, we haven't seen that. How about Sam Bradford? First overall pick in the draft in 2010, right? It's his third year. So far, he's thrown 30 touchdown passes, and he has thrown 26 interceptions. His passer rating, this is a quick average, is about 74, looking at 3 years. He had 18 touchdowns and 15 picks as a rookie, 6-6 last year.
Got hurt.
Right? No, only started 10 games or played 10 games. This year he's 6-5, passer rating 78.6, 57.5 completion percentage. I wonder if they're having the exact same conversation about Sam Bradford.
Well, there were.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they are. There was actually, going into the draft this year, there were some people critical of them trading out of the second spot.
They thought they should have taken a quarterback.
They thought they should have taken RG3 and gotten rid of Sam Bradford or traded him away. And so this is not just about Blaine Gabbert. This is the NFL today.
It's the young quarterback dilemma.
Exactly. The trigger is even going to get quicker because now you don't have to invest $50 million into Bradford.
Right.
The salaries, you can take chances and you can make quicker decisions. They might not be the right decisions. You might give up on a guy too soon.
Should they?
But the
quarterback position is still fundamentally the most difficult position in all of sports, right, Jeff?
By far. But I disagree with Tony on this one thing, and I think the trigger is not necessarily quicker because the cost is not as high. And I think that you would be more comfortable if a guy's, you know, was a high pick and he wasn't what you expected early on. You say, okay, well, we can keep him on the roster and still go get another guy, or you know, it'd be a free agency or draft another guy.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying you get rid of him.
The trigger wouldn't be as quick.
So you see more Troy Aikman, Steve Walsh type.
Yep.
Because the cost is cheaper. The trigger
is
quick in the sense of saying
finding somebody else.
We're going to go get someone else. Not that we're going to get rid of them, but you know, we need to go find someone else to. I'm not saying we're there yet.
I want to make sure we're real clear on that.
But what we talk about is you want to see that progression.
I want to go back.
And I get this question.
I want to go back and read exactly what you wrote, John, and I don't remember what it was that you wrote it in. And you said, what is the definition of a successful year for this team?
Right.
And you said, at the end of the year, about Blaine Gabbert.
Well, essentially, and I'm getting this question a lot this week, will we know? And what I keep continuing to write is, yeah, we'll know a lot more. He has to get better over the next 11 games. And if he doesn't, then it's a problem. If he does get better, then you've got a guy who's improving that
Absolutely.
You can look at and say, okay. But what I wrote was, by the end of the year, in December, you want to be able to look at Blaine and go, yeah, he can be the guy. Right now, you don't know that.
No, but it's too early.
In 11 games, I think that, you know, by the end of the season, if you don't have a good feeling that he's the guy, then it's a problem.
Okay,
but my point before we go to that, my point in bringing this up as a topic and talking about this, for fans to make the decision today that he can't do it, it is way too early.
You can see why they do.
I understand that.
Absolutely.
I get it.
Right.
I get it because you look at the other young quarterbacks and you see production and big games and exciting things, but it is too early.
So you can see why they do, but you also know why they shouldn't.
Absolutely.
You know why they shouldn't get ahead of themselves.
I know why the Jaguars and the people who are paid to make those decisions shouldn't. Fans should. It's their right. I mean, they can do whatever they want. But as a team and as decision makers, that's why you have to ignore that. You have to let the process play out. And
exactly right.
All right, then a list.
We can debate a lot of different things about Blaine Gabbert, but we all agree on one: arm talent, right? I mean,
he has
arm talent.
Oh, no question. He's got all talent.
Two, very intelligent.
Yep,
okay?
I agree.
Very intelligent. Number three, and a lot of people may be surprised at this: tough.
He's a tough kid.
Both
mentally
and
physically.
He's shown that this year. The issue is no longer is he scared of the rush. He's not scared to get hit.
But the one thing that you just don't know, and it's hard to put a category on it, and it just takes time and experience, does he have it?
You know what I say? Does he see it?
Right.
The great quarterbacks,
but some of them see it and still can't execute.
No, but he has all that stuff.
That's why I like to call it because it's a combination.
Right, but you have to be able to see. He has the ability. If he can see it, he has all the other things to get it done.
He's shown flashes of having it.
The guys who are really good at that position, when they drop back, they see the play. It slows down. They anticipate. They know where guys are going to be and what's going to happen, and that's why they can go from 1, 2, and 3 and still get the ball out of their hands extremely quick.
Well, and I think that's related to something we talked about during the break. Mike Mularkey's addressed it several times. The internal clock has become sort of the pressing issue, and fans are talking about it as well they should be. And Mike has said several times he believes that some of what's the pressure that Blaine's felt in the past is sort of coming up now, that there are plays where even when he has time, which he doesn't always have time this year, but there are plays that even when he has time, he's not letting it develop.
Well,
and I think that has become the central issue around Blaine Gabbert, and in a sense the central issue facing the team right now. Will that improve?
But also the reason why I think his clock is fast. Look what he ran in college.
Sure.
I mean, that whole system is designed about take the snap, step back, and throw the ball, mm-hmm. and it's gone. You know, so, I mean, he's fighting something that sure. he was used to in college.
And can he win the fight is the question.
We will see.
All right. Time for a break. We'll be back live at Latitude 30. Jaguars This Week continues. Joe?
Thank you, Brian Sexton. Season ticket owners, the Jaguars Refer a Fan program is designed to put money in your pocket. You're invited to refer friends to become Jaguars multi-year season ticket owners in return for a cash referral fee. If you need more information, just call the Jaguars ticket office, 904-633-2000, or visit jaguars.com. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, rolls on Jaguars Radio. Well, gang, at Sonny's, you can get a heap of help on a baby back ribs, plus two of your favorite sidekicks and garlic bread or cornbread for only $12.99. Want to make it all you can eat? Just $4 more. Sonny's, the first name in barbecue, out to the first name in Jaguars. That's Brian.
Well, in this show it is, but only first because name. That's what the announcer reads. Welcome back, Jaguars This Week, live from Latitude 30. John Osher is here. Jeff Lagerman is here. Tony Buscelli as well, talking about the Jaguars, 1-4 coming off that loss. We were knee-deep in the quarterback. Is there anything else you'd like to say about the quarterback?
Well, I just would add that, you know, we continued to talk more about it in the break, and we didn't add anything that was, you know, earth-shaking to the conversation. But I think the one thing that we all agree on is that you look at the quarterbacks that have come from that type of system in college that Blaine has come from, that spread option, whatever you want to call it. Alex Smith, Cam Newton, Aaron Rodgers came from it, but
No, he didn't. Is it more Tedford's more of a pro style?
Who else came from that spread option?
Well, Tiba.
Sam Bradford came from that.
Sam Bradford
ran that at Oklahoma.
Okay. You know, but what we're seeing is what
Jake Locker came from that. They ran it in Washington.
Those quarterbacks that have come
at the end though, they ran
the last year.
They ran pro style.
They ran pro style.
But the quarterbacks that have come from those systems, I mean, clearly have an adjustment period in the NFL. Whereas quarterback Tannehill, you know, his coach now was his coach at Texas A&M.
No, absolutely.
You know, and he came from a pro style offense.
You know, the other one did
the adjustments easier.
RG3 came in from a spread.
Yeah, but he's just a freak. He's kind of like Cam Newton.
No, I agree. No, I'm just saying. I'm thinking of different guys. He did.
Let me throw this.
By the way, let me just add this real quick. On did I or did I not say that RG3 would not last the year? And I said it 3 weeks ago.
You bet.
It's embarrassing how the Shanahans are being so. What's my
cavalier.
Word?
Cavalier.
I use cavalier too.
Selfish, because they're trying to make themselves look good by exposing him so much.
You know, the argument is there though, is the fact that their offensive line is so bad, which it is, that it'd be more dangerous sitting in the pocket because he's going to get killed back there as well.
He's going to kick. Hey,
no, I agree. I'm just saying that's the argument.
That hit that
I'm not
he took.
Whether
I mean, that hit that he took wasn't even his worst one that he's taken all year.
He needs to learn to slide.
But anyway, sorry about that.
No. I was looking during the break at quarterbacks, historical quarterbacks. I went to John Elway, who's my favorite quarterback of all time, and I went to Brett Favre, and then I went to Troy Aikman. And here's the other than Favre, I had to throw him out because the first year he was a starter in Green Bay, he threw for 3,500 yards. But Troy Aikman was probably the best example, and I know you've used him as well. 150 yards a game his first year.
Yeah.
171.9 his second year. Third year it went to 225. Fourth year it went to 243. Of course, you know, and then they became a Super Bowl team. The touchdowns were just about the same. You know, 12 to 10, you know, 11 to 10, something like that, with both Elway, Aikman, and what we're looking at right now.
And they were so confident in Troy Aikman that they used a supplemental pick on Walsh.
I guess the point is, when you look at it to evaluate, to make any sort of a comparison, are you looking at the yards per game as opposed to the touchdowns?
No, I disagree with the premise of the evaluation a little bit. The game was different. It was a different game, 100% different when Elway was quarterback. The yards weren't
even. They were a passing offense.
No, they weren't.
Oh, yes, they were. The Three Amigos? Were.
Yeah, but before they got Terrell Davis, they were
first of all,
the
Three Amigos were not there when Elway
first
started.
They went to two Super Bowls. They lost them both.
I understand that.
But
no,
he's talking about the rookie year. In his rookie
I'm looking at the first two or three
years. Couple of years.
He was go look at the passing numbers of Elway's entire career. It was a different league. Even when Aikman came in, it was a different league. In the last – go the passing numbers – that's why last year we had four or five forward
it
guys over 5,000.
But you can still evaluate
first of all,
to
I
relative.
Didn't set a criteria. All I said is what do you look at?
I don't think you can look at –
I think
it's
you
hard.
Can because it's individual as quarterbacks. You know? I mean, I think you can look at a quarterback and what a quarterback does. Now, I'm not – look, I didn't go back to Roger Staubach or Otto Graham. I just went back
no,
to –
no, but the game was – I mean, look at the passing numbers – the last
but it's post-78, so the rules had all been changed.
No, the rules have even changed greater.
I understand that, but that's why I went back to Elway, just to all see. Right. So what I'm asking is...
Agree to disagree.
And we do that all the time. I guess what I'm asking is, if you wanted to make an evaluation, what would you place a greater criteria on? Would you put it on for a young quarterback? Would you put it on the touchdown-to-interception ratio? Would you put it on the yards per game? Or would you put it on the quarterback rating? I mean, if you're just looking to see...
Yeah,
to me,
what would you look at as most important?
Man, I'd want to look at all of them, but I mean, to me, I mean, rating is probably the one that kind of gives you an idea on all of it.
I'd say probably touchdown interception. You want to see more of it, though. I think the biggest gripe fans have with Blaine is, you know, 12-10 last year, and the idea that he's not willing to go downfield, he's not willing to go do enough, and that it's all checked. That you can't really judge him until he does something. And I think it's probably just the lack of what we were talking about earlier, the lack of a couple of games where after the game you went, yeah. And so I'm not sure it's a numbers thing. I think it's
– I don't think –
so far the eye test hasn't been passed.
Well, I think it's the eye test, but I do not – I think it's a dangerous – not dangerous. I mean, it's fun to do. Who cares? It's not dangerous. That's
well, we're
dumb,
comparing it to today's quarterback. So.
Yeah, but I think you have to. I think that is more. I would look at him in the last 10 years of guys who've come in, and where they are now. I mean, John Elway. Go look at John Elway's touchdown interception numbers. They were never good.
No, I did. That's why. That's which is where.
But it was
where
a different game. It was a different game.
That's where the question came from.
I mean, it was a running back.
His rating got better though, which is why I brought it up.
I don't think he was ever over a 90 rating for one season.
Yeah, I mean, he got into the 90s a little bit.
Low 90s when Terrell Davis was there.
But again, that's why I said if you're looking at a couple of different criteria for a quarterback to see, right? Because quarterbacks are different, systems are different, coaches that they work with are different, talent around them is certainly
absolutely
different. So if you're looking,
well, win percentage is the number one evaluator.
There you go. There you
I
go.
I mean, if you want a number to evaluate a quarterback,
well,
that's
looking,
it.
I'm looking for
except
a reason,
for Mark Sanchez, it doesn't apply to him.
I'm looking for a historical reason of why patience is important. That's all.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Did you like my little shot there at the USC guy of yours?
I got it.
But you agree with me on that, don't you?
I disagree. Look at the talk about no talent. Tell me one guy on that team on offensively that you
right
want.
Now?
Well, yeah, without Santonio
right.
Holmes.
There's not one.
Yeah, without Santonio Holmes there. Dustin Keller didn't quite count as a game breaker.
Well, he's not even playing.
I bet he did have some Santonio Holmes and Plex and Keller.
Yeah, Plex. People are lining up to get Plex.
Well, and he had LaDainian Tomlinson.
At the end of his career.
Yeah, but he was still really good.
Oh, he was good. And they went to two AFC title games.
Well, sort of getting back to what we were talking about, though. We did mention one guy during the break, and we haven't mentioned him on the air. The comparison with Eli Manning.
That's a great comparison. See,
that's
where I would go.
That's the one guy.
For sure. That
has done that.
Relative.
Who has started slow in this era, and where people were writing him off for a lot of the same reasons they talk about Blaine. You know, supposedly he ducked in the pocket. He threw off his back foot. He wasn't consistent early. Really up until they won the Super Bowl in 07. And even a couple years after that, there was not that much confidence in him. But he's, obviously become elite. So it can happen, but it is rare.
I'm going to go look at Matt Stafford's numbers here at the top of the hour, and we talk about him. Just looking at the quarterbacks. We got a lot more to talk about. Talk about the bye week, some areas where the Jaguars have focused on the practice field, and more. News is next here on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it.
Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna.
Live from Latitude 30.
Jaguars This Week.
With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. color analyst Jeff Lugeman, Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher, and some guy named Tony Boselli.
Who? Inconceivable!
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Let the deliberations begin.
You can't handle the truth.
Here's Brian Sexton.
All right, so 11 games remain. Let's start hour number two with this. Where can they improve the most, the quickest? What can they do to go out to Oakland and change their fortunes? What can they do with the bye week next week to go out there? Is it stopping the run? Is it working on the run defense so that Darren McFadden
would be,
doesn't own
that
them?
That would be my number one. You're averaging, or opponents are averaging, like 4.7 yards a rush. And I don't care who you are. I mean, you give me 11 guys in this room, and we'll find a way.
Come on, 11 guys in this room?
Yeah, even your bad hip. And we'll find a way.
My hip's good now. I can play a couple downs at
But you know what I mean? I always believe this, and that you can find ways to stop the run. Mm-hmm. You know, you get eight guys up in the box, whatever. You know, and I think that, Brian, I think you hit it right on the head. That's number one for the defense. Because right now, what, three sacks? You're not rushing the passer very good.
But you stop the run, you can get a little better there.
You can get a little better because you're going to get some better down and distances and have more obvious passing situations for the opponent.
And stopping the run, to Jeff's point, is – can be an effort thing. I mean, great effort and good technique, you can become a solid run defense. Not giving up 4.7. I mean,
more demoralizing than to not be able to stop the run.
And there's no excuse to be giving up 4.7 yards per carry.
Yeah, the most disappointing thing so far this year to me, the Houston Texans game was when they ran their 4-minute drill, which is eating up the clock and running football. In that game, you know, I think when you get to that point, you're behind. Defenders, a little different than offense. That you try to do too much. You know, you're trying to, okay, I'm going to play my gap, but you know what? The last couple times he cut back here and got a gain, I'm going to go back over here too, you know. You try to play outside of your responsibility. And I saw that in the Houston game in the four-minute situation. And against the Bears, I don't know if I saw the best effort at the end of that game.
And that is an indictment against any athlete.
And there were situations where guys were trying to do too much. But, man, when they put the backup in, you know, and the backup runs for a touchdown, I mean.
I believe it was the backup to the backup. Was it,
it was not the backup. Yeah. It was the backup
it
to
was
the backup.
I
wish it had been the backup.
In the Jaguars' case, it would have been like going down to Jalen Parmley.
Well, and not to bring up bad memories for both of us, but it was – 97 playoffs in Denver where they just started running the ball on us. We couldn't stop it no matter who they put in there. And it's like
– couldn't stop it.
And you sit there both offensively and defensively talking about how demoralizing that is. It's like as an offense player, like, we're never going to get back on the field.
I would.
And as a defensive player, I know those guys are sitting there going, you're frustrated. You're trying to do too much. And – but you can – I think you can remedy that quicker – you don't become a great pass rusher all of a sudden.
That's the easiest thing to fix is stopping the run.
Stop the run. And I think we have to – and so I agree with where Brian started this. Let's become very good at stopping the run, and so it's something we can hang our hats on.
And that's where Daryl Smith, you know, should be able to help. People, you know, I get emails all the time. You're talking Daryl Smith too much. You're talking Daryl Smith too much. And you know, he's not going to solve everything, but – he did set a franchise record for tackles for loss last year.
That changes
down in distance. You know, if once a game he's putting you in second and 11 rather than second and 6, all of a sudden things tilt a little bit. And you got to figure that he's stopping players for more gain. I mean, you're for more no gains on that side of the ball than the backup would be.
Well, now the one thing we don't know is you hope he's going to be able to get all the way back healthy with the groin. You don't know what the situation is there. But if he is healthy, we talked about to start the show, how many impact players are there? He is a impact player on defense.
Daryl, Paul, Derek, then you'd have, you know. And then, you know, I think Rasheen, once he's back, has shown that he is not just, you know, an impact, you know, play type of guy, but I mean, he can be a game changer.
But it's hard to count on that a year removed from
ACL. I know. I'm just saying
Lowry's a guy who can be that. He'd hold on to the ball a couple of times this year. He could have turned games around.
And you know, the one guy that I think needs to step his game up is Dewan Landry. I really believe that. You know, he's a physical safety. And have we seen a tackle or anything where you just went, ooh? Or, you know, in the broadcast, Brian goes in, boom, who's that? You know, and I'm like, oh, my God, that was a great hit.
I think it's safe to say that when you're 1-4, pretty much everyone can step
in. Yeah, but you know what? Anybody can hit somebody in the mouth.
No, I'm just saying, I mean, we could go down the list of guys who need to play better.
No, I'd say up front, Terrence is probably the guy that you would like to see it the most because he should be and has been a disruptive player on run defense where all of a sudden the opponent cannot get anything going in the middle because everything's bunched up even before the snap almost. He's that kind of penetration guy.
They need him to
step up. I saw
it
a few times last year, and you just haven't seen it this year. And that's something that a couple years ago when I got here, you heard this is something to build around.
Well, could it be?
And it's not a strength right now.
And I was joking earlier about he needs to gain some weight back. But in all seriousness, Jeff, you played the defense line position. Watching him, he gets pushed around more now than I've ever seen him in his entire career.
Yeah, but it's not, nothing to do with the weight.
Has he lost the weight? Has he lost some strength with that weight? Because a lot of times guys lose weight and they lose strength at the same time.
You know,
you don't think it has anything to do with it?
They released Aaron Morgan and they brought up Brian Davis. And they have been putting Bosworth on the sideline and bringing in.
I want Jeff to comment on that.
But let me finish my thought. They bring in Julian Stanford. Is there a case to be made for trying Jarris Pendleton and putting him in the rotation and see if he gives you something? I mean, this is a guy whose footwork impressed you from the very first day he arrived.
Well, that's always an option, you know, if the performance doesn't get better. I mean,
we're talking about a guy from Ashland. I get that. But
sure,
a guy that at least can go get 8-10 snaps a game.
Well, I mean, that's always a possibility, but I mean, I'm not ready to kind of throw my arms up in the air on Terrence Knight yet. I mean,
maybe motivate him a little.
Well, you know, I mean,
you've already benched him. What else you want to do? Deactivate him?
Punch him inactive again. If that's what it takes.
Well, it's not just him though.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, let's not pile on.
I'm not trying to pile on Terrence.
No, I was making the point that he is a player who, when he's at the top of his game, can play above the X's and O's. Not a big defense.
He could be a factor.
Right, and that's the reason I mentioned him. There are other guys up front who, even when they maximize playing out, are not going to be as dominant as Terrence can be when he's on his game.
And Jeremy Mincy has got to go back to the way he played in the first couple games, which was with great effort, great technique, great awareness, because in the last two games, not good. He's better than that.
Did you just say
I was trying to come up with a word.
What was that descriptive sound? I was
just trying to come up with a word, and I couldn't come up with it, so I just made a sound.
Rivaled Tony dropping the fork last week.
Can we play that back, Joe? Is there any way we can get logs?
But, you know, the reason I say that about Mincy is that, I mean, I love him. I mean, he plays hard. He gives you everything he's got. But he did. I don't know if he gave you everything he had this past Sunday. You know, a couple times he was kind of loafing a little bit. His awareness, I mean, he's a guy that's been around long enough. His awareness needs to be better. He's capable of more. Terrence is capable. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are capable of more. You know, we go back to the saying, is that, you know, is it a talent problem? Well, it's always, you always want more talent. But you also always want more production out of the talent you got.
Yeah, and we got to get off blocks. I mean, you can talk about that front seven as it, all of them, and including Posluszny. We have to do a better job of getting off blocks and making plays.
All right, is there anything schematically they can do to stop the run better when they go to Oakland a week from Sunday?
Put Dewan in the box.
Yeah, I mean, that would help. You know, you put Dewan up in the box, you know, to get eight guys up there. You know, I don't know if you do that against the Oakland Raiders. I haven't watched the film on them yet, so I don't know.
I've watched them. McFadden's pretty good.
Who is?
Darren McFadden.
Yeah, he's pretty good back. I know he's good.
I've watched the last week, and he's pretty good.
I know he's good, but you know, I don't know what kind of what
he's
know,
really
expect
fast.
Out of Carson Palmer and everything.
Well,
so
I would put.
I don't know schematically.
I would put eight in the box against the Oakland Raiders and say, Carson and those receivers, if you can beat us, God bless you.
What's nervous is, though, is that I think would be a little nerve-wracking if you choose to do that, and I'm not trying to be the X's and O's junkie here for everybody, but is that you're going to have Pruszynski probably in the secondary.
Oh, that's because of Lowry. You're right.
So
that changes it.
Not sure how that game plan would be.
Go two high safeties.
Whoops. All right, we're due for a break. Let's take it, Joe.
Okay, Brian, you need a truck that works for you even when you're not working? Well, the 2012 Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck that fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealers today, proud sponsors of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, rolls on Jaguars Radio. Well, Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. You'll know more, get better about the Jaguars with these guys, Brian.
All right, welcome back. Jaguars This Week live from Latitude 30, the official away game headquarters of the Jacksonville Jaguars. You can join them every Sunday that the Jaguars are on the road. Jackson DeVille, the cheerleaders will be here. I'm told it's a lot of fun.
You know the problem with this place, though?
Food?
Choices?
Yes. Too much of it?
There's too much food for me. Because I'm not even really hungry anymore. I've had sliders, a half a sandwich.
That was pretty good. The California Club was good.
California Club was outstanding.
Oh, you're a little hungry.
It's 50-50 whether I order a pizza now. And that's just, I don't need one.
Now, wait. Is it only 50-50 because you're going to get the cobbler for sure?
No cobbler tonight.
Oh,
no,
come
no.
on.
No dessert tonight. Pizza,
really?
Pizza might be my dessert.
I'll get the cobbler. That means you'll eat half of it.
No, but I mean, it's a problem.
Just a quick note that tonight tried something new. I had me and Joey had the steak nachos. Four thumbs up.
That would be both the Joes and both the Logs.
Outstanding.
I'll be having that next week.
I'm having it next week, too.
You might want to come by and experience it for yourself.
That's enough food talk.
But it is a problem.
What is?
Us being here every Wednesday because the food is too good.
You might work out before you come.
I did where I worked out today. Loggy challenged me last week. He says, why don't you get your fat bleep in the gym? And I'll like to report I have been in the gym since last Wednesday, I think four or five times.
Good for you.
And I'll be there tomorrow morning.
I was going to say to work all of this.
No, I was going to say there's two steps to that process. One of them is push-ups, and the other one is push-back.
One at a time.
And that would be push-back from the table a little bit.
Listen, I've eaten no more than you tonight.
Yes, you have. You had sliders.
You had nachos.
Yeah, but I mean, it was just, I split them.
No, I know what
splitting. You split the sliders.
I know what splitting food with you is like. And so Joe had about two bites, and you had the rest.
No, Joey had a lot.
No, Joe's
agreeing. Joey had a lot.
Yeah.
All right.
Joey had all the sour cream. All right, we're done with food.
All right, let's go to the offensive side of the ball. We talked about the defense and what the defense can do to improve the output. How about the offensive side when they're in Oakland a week from Sunday? What can they do immediately and now to create a better outcome?
Be more consistent. I mean, and much like the defense and that it starts up front for the defense, I think it starts up front for the offense. And that they've got to perform at the level that they're capable of. I think Uche has more in him. I think Eben's going to continue to get better. He's got more in him. I think Cameron Bradfield is – I think he's a talent.
And I agree with that.
I really think he's going to – he's a long-term solution at right tackle.
I agree with that.
And I think he's going to only get better with time. But the way he played last week – you know, he had to block Julius Peppers, Shea McClellan, Israel Donaje. He got the one holding call that wasn't his fault. That was Guy Wimper that was supposed to squeeze down from the tight end position. But I really, really like him. And I think it starts up front. Those guys have to be solid because when they're solid up front, the running game is better. Blaine has more time. And then after that, it's all about the passing game and the chemistry between Blaine and all his wide receivers.
Because they've got to make some things happen downfield because that's why the running game isn't working right now. The Bears, absolutely were not going to let them run.
They were in single high safety the entire
so,
and they're
like first and second down.
And they're a too high team.
So until you make things happen downfield, you're always going to have check down, and you're always going to have the running game getting 60 or 70 yards right now.
But, you know,
it's a bad combination.
The incredible thing about last year is that they saw the exact same thing, and they had a back that led the league in rushing. I mean, that's insane. I mean, you had a back, a running back, lead the league in rushing, in which you faced eight men in the box all the time.
Can't we all agree that's not really a formula for victory?
No,
we
I'm 5-11. I'm not saying, I'm just trying to point out the fact that that's
I agree with you.
Very rare that you could be able to do that. I think that, you know, goes to show you how good Maurice was.
I hope we never have to do that again.
And the line run blocked very, very well. And late in the season, they committed to it. They were going to get their running yard. So, I mean,
I'll tell you
it's just got to get more complete.
The offense has to – both of them said it. You need more big plays on offense. You have to start eating up yards, big chunks, big plays down the field. And defenses are going to give you the opportunity because you're going to see a lot of single high safety with eight men in the box on first and second down. And you have to – as an offense – you have to be able to take advantage of that.
I think they will. I think it's going to get better. And Mike Mularkey, you know, everybody's like, how can he be so positive? It's terrible, you know.
I mean, what's he supposed to say?
I get it. I mean, the one thing I do like about Mike is that he is consistent. He is even keeled.
Absolutely.
And I like that.
In a world that's so negative around them right now, for the obvious reason, somebody has to be a lighthouse. Somebody has to be the beacon out there. Otherwise, they're going to think they have no shot.
Well, even on Twitter, I watched the film and I made the comment. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was. And then mentioned a couple good things I thought they did. A lot of things we've been talking about here.
Right.
And I got abused on Twitter. And I finally said,
Welcome to my world, Tony.
I was like, guys, it's easy to sit here and be negative and say the end of the world is here and this team's never going to win again. I can do that with everybody
That's
else.
It's a safe route.
And I could give you the list of all the things they do wrong. Sure. However, there are some things to build on. I think the offensive line played better. I think you have a Pro Bowl left tackle. I think Derek Cox is a shutdown corner. He needs to stay healthy.
You got a young right tackle.
You have a young right tackle.
That's important.
I mean, there was the first half. I mean, we haven't even talked about the positives, really. The first half, it was 3-3, and this team was going toe-to-toe with a very good Chicago Bears team.
And they had shot themselves in the foot at the end of the half.
Exactly right. They didn't take advantage of some situations.
They had Derek Cox interception, and they had I guess it was a red zone opportunity. If not, it was close.
It was red zone.
Well, they had a 5-yard penalty that pushed them to the 21.
They were in the red zone.
Yeah, but it was the 16.
Yep.
If you convert those there, it's a different game in the second half.
And so that's something to build
on.
And so to everyone listening, and I know right now everyone listening is saying, we are so tired of hearing this, you know, kind of Pollyannic.
Yeah, but God, aren't they tired of listening to all that's bad, too, and the world
but
is
that's,
ending?
No, they're really not. I'm impressed. Baselli has brought some positive energy tonight.
No, but
I like it, though, because you know what? I was actually around the corner from you the last couple days when you stopped into the offices. And
I was depressed.
Yeah. You were Captain Negative.
Well, I just because, you know, I was Jeff. Very good. Not so much Captain Negative, but you and Jeff, you and I have had these conversations. You watch the All-22, and you view it almost – we're not coaches, but you view it as an ex-player and the X's and O's, and you get frustrated by mistakes that are happening.
And you've got to take a step back, too.
And you get upset, but then you have to also look at the bigger picture and say, okay, wait a second. This is a 3-3 ball game going into halftime. Yes, we gave up 38 in the second half. Yes, it got away from us, and our defense, whether they gave up or quit or whatever, was a sieve, and offensively we threw two pick sixes and we did nothing.
It's a perfect storm.
Perfect storm. It is what it is. But you also saw a team in the first half that came out at home against a playoff caliber team in Chicago, went toe to toe, moved the ball, converted some big third downs, yes, shot themselves in the foot, didn't take advantage of opportunities, but a defense that was a bend but don't break, really what I think they are.
Yeah, that's what they were last year.
That's what they are. And you sat back and you said,
until right. you get some dominance up front, that's what you'll
that's be. What you are. So there is, and you go into the second half, and you and we can we'll spend a lot of time next week on this, I'm sure, and you look at the schedule and you look at the opportunities and you say, if they can build on that first half and if they can take steps and off that foundation, this is a team that will win football games on the back half of their schedule.
Because right. they have shown that they can play, even on the road, against teams that they're quote-unquote supposed to play with. So there are teams like that coming up on the schedule. So as hard as it is to believe at 41-3 and 27-10, whatever their home scores have been.
27-7.
They have been able to compete in situations where they're quote-unquote supposed to compete.
Well, and you go and you look at this, and I know we don't want to go all the way back, but opening weekend in Minnesota, that's a 4-1 team now that they had on the ropes and had beaten until the last 16 seconds of the game. And I just watched
and
that.
And really outplayed them.
The entire game.
A good percentage of the game.
I just watched
not
that.
First part of the second half, but most of the game.
And I just watched that team on tape because I'm doing the Lions, Philadelphia, Detroit Lions, Philadelphia Eagles game this weekend. And I watched the Vikings play the Lions because the Lions had a bye this week. That was 2 weeks ago. And I watched a Vikings team beat up on a Lions team that's going to come here in a few weeks. And you start looking at the NFL, and this is what I think everyone listening needs to understand. Although we have struggled and we have played terribly, especially in the second half of these home games, no excuses for it. The NFL is a league that is typically the game is changed on a handful of plays.
And situational even, game. Really
even
is.
In the Chicago game, it was a handful of plays that changed the outcome of that ball game. It was two.
Absolutely.
It was a sack fumble in the first half. It was a pick six in the second half. Now, all of a sudden, instead of being a
and the
lead
39-yard pass to Devin Hester that set up the 20-3 lead. Those are the three plays.
So then all of a sudden the game gets away from you. So as Jeff likes to say, I was, you know, all you know, whether it's being negative or whatever you want to say, and the fans will say, we're not being negative, we're being realist. Whatever you want to call it, there is something to build on for the second half.
You're not a positive guy.
Not if you listen to anyone else. We'll just leave it at that.
But
news, Joe.
That's the easy thing. That's the easy
route.
That's
what I'm saying. It's easy to be negative. It's tough to be positive.
Well, how about this? Bueller Swiss Watch Company is proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. Bueller Swiss watches are available at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Tallahassee Diamond Center in Tallahassee, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta, or Valdosta, as they call it in Valdosta. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, will return on Jaguars. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30. This portion of Jaguars This Week brought to you by Football Fanatic.
All right, welcome back. Jaguars This Week live from Latitude 30. Brian Sexton sitting next to Tony Boselli. Across the way is John Osher.
I'm revived, Brian. Positive Tony has me back.
You know,
I like positive
and
Tony.
And he's my teammate over here.
Well, you know what I was worried about?
I like positive Tony.
You know what I was worried about? Because out of the four of us, Jeff is usually like the Pollyannic, everything's good, nothing's wrong in the world.
Jeff has been a little down
and
today.
Jeff has been down today, so I felt an obligation to come and rescue the group.
You did good. I liked it.
Typically, I feel like in one of those bad Disney movies where they switch roles.
Because usually it's Jeff kind of, you know, saving the day, everything's going to be okay.
So what you're saying is Jeff is the logical, reasonable one, and you're the emotional off-the-handle guy.
It's Freaky Wednesday.
I guess. If that's the way you want to put it, I'm okay with that.
I'm just trying to start trouble, that's all.
I was emotional. I've been emotional in the past.
No, I got to admit, I was a little down.
So do you want to come speak to the Ponte Vedra Rotary Club with me tomorrow morning?
I got him on the couch, and I had to talk him through it and help him out.
I need a couple days off. That's what I need.
And you're getting it.
You know, I just how I am. I just need a couple days off and, you know, get my mojo back. Not Maurice Jones-Drew, my mojo.
You need
personal
to go,
mojo.
You need to go kill some things. Which you need
exactly.
To
I need a trip to the woods. And I'll get it. I'll get it in.
Field dress it? Does that take away any of your stress?
You know, it's just, you know, sometimes you just need a break. And sometimes it's, and you know, this is because players, same thing. I mean, sometimes a break can be a day. Sometimes a break just is an hour.
Cue the airline commercial.
and emotionally, I need a break this week. I do. I need a break.
Yeah, the fourth quarter on Sunday was really, it was a stretch as it was falling apart.
Well, the reason, I think it really was. It kind of got to me this week.
I've been there. I know exactly what you're talking about.
My expectations, I don't want to say my expectations were for, you know, division lead and all that. I mean, that's not where I was at. But, I mean, my expectations were certainly higher for this football team than what they've achieved so far. You know, and so, you know, and so I think I'll, when you have those expectations and they're not met, you know, and I know a lot of people count on us to shoot it to them straight. You know, and we shoot it to them straight. We honestly tell you what we think. But a lot of people think we're just pulling the wool over everybody's eyes, you know, and there are comments way back in August and September, you know, at the beginning of the year. We were just
blowing smoke.
Whatever you want, however you want to call it.
I just had the conversation with Tony. And the most difficult part about this, and I'll lead off tomorrow at the Ponte Vedra Rotary with this, is when we stood there in August and watched them in training camp and played.
I know what I saw.
They looked much better.
That's the hardest part to explain to people, is where is the team that we watched? And I know it was preseason, so I'm judging the first drive against the Giants and the first drive against the Saints.
Well, and forget the preseason. This team came out against the Minnesota Vikings on the road against a team that's 4-1.
And beat the Niners this year
and had the game won with 20 seconds left to go.
Right. Well, and I was the one who wrote after New Orleans, it's okay to be excited. And I've gotten a few emails that said, hey, Johnny, still excited? Well, you know, I get that. And that's what it's all about.
Johnny, are you really excited still?
I'm not that excited right now, Jeff. I mean, but I do think that there is a long way to go. And I think there is still opportunity for improvement.
Well, that's and the frustrating thing is you saying, and I know what you mean, I agree, there's a long way to go because the fans, and we all hear it, whether you're at a Rotary Club, whether you're on Twitter,
frightens me these days.
I guess Jeff doesn't hear it because he's out in the woods by himself.
He doesn't have Twitter.
I'm starting to think he is about the smartest of all three of us. Twitter is a vicious place.
It's vile right now. But anyways, my point is when you say there's a long way to go, they say, how much longer? We have been waiting since for a team that's competitive since 2007 for the playoffs.
And I've seen you answer it, Tony. I answer it the same way. You know, I had a lot of people on Sunday night. It was the worst, obviously. And, you know, one of them said, we're mad, John. And I said, you know, you should be. I'd be. If I were in your shoes, I'd be mad, too. And the people involved here, they get that.
I don't get that.
Why people are mad?
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I was going to say,
you're worse than all of them today, Logan.
He's just thinking about the woods right now. He's already checked out.
No, I have not checked out.
He's thinking about cobbler.
Cobbler
right
and the woods.
Thinking about Ollie's bringing us some peach cobbler. Allie, excuse me. What did I say, Ollie? Yeah,
Ollie.
It's close enough.
She's terrible.
Are you sure you haven't checked out?
Brian, stick
with us for just a couple minutes. You want to talk about a tough job? Look, if describing the plays in that fourth quarter is tough, going to the locker room afterwards to conduct a live interview with the coach and the players when they're not feeling like talking, that can't be
How'd
easy.
How'd that go, Jeff?
That's not an easy thing to do.
It's a little rough, but you know, I mean, I get it. I mean, I know where they're at. I mean, unfortunately, I've talked to a lot of some of the coaches over the last couple weeks because a lot of the coaches are upset, and they're upset because you're having to talk about it. And I'm just like, hey, look, I've been there. You know, 6 years, unfortunately, I spent in New York, and we never had a winning season.
Right.
I know what it's like, and I know the flip side of that. I know what it's like to be a part of something special and good.
96.
Here in 96, 97, and 98, even though I was, you know, in the training room. But, man, I know what it's like. So it's not fun. It's not fun, and it takes a toll. You know, Maurice has made some comments this week and that he's had trouble sleeping. I know Maurice is coming under some fire. But, I mean, it does. It takes a toll on him. You know, a lot of people – for them, it's their weekend enjoyment, and it's, you know, their fans, but you know, people also have to remember this is players and coaches' personnel. This is their lives.
They live it every moment.
I mean, this is their lives.
In a smaller sense, after that, after the last two home losses, I have not been able to go home and sit and enjoy a Sunday night football game. You know what I mean? I found a distraction. That's just a broadcaster.
You're thinking about...
That's a broadcaster. Yeah. Think about what it is for a coach or a player, you know, who wants to go home and relax, and they can't even...
No, you can't.
You can't.
It's hard, you know.
You can't turn the computer on.
You know, been there, done that, and I get it.
It's a bad feeling.
It really
is.
And I think...
And fans don't want to hear this, and I get that. But
maybe they should hear it, because that'll give them a little bit more sensitivity towards those guys.
And as an ex-player, to build on what Jeff said, they're... No one cares more than the guys who just got embarrassed. I have been on the field and been embarrassed. And we joke about it now, flying home from Minnesota after getting whooped on Sunday night football, there was nobody who felt worse than me and the other guys on that team. There was nobody who felt worse. After getting beat in the playoffs in 97 and getting embarrassed in Denver...
313
and getting on the plane and flying home and having to walk in and no one feels worse. I mean, and so as fans, I hope you. I mean, these guys. It is because you hear things they don't care. You know what? It is important to the staff. It is important, and Gene Smith has been getting just filleted this week, and nobody cares more than him. And I'm not going to do this. I'm not defending picks or anything with what I'm saying here. I'm saying there's not a person in that building who cares more and works harder than Gene Smith.
Who cares more about the franchise? He is
not himself.
City.
He's not even worried about himself, I promise you. He's worried about the franchise and the product that they put on the field. And so that is not. I'm not saying that to make excuses. I'm not saying that to say it's okay to get beat 41-3. Not okay to be 1-4. Not okay to be below average. I'm just saying the pain you feel as fans and the pain we feel as part of the organization on a little bit higher than fans, but much less than the players and the coaches, they feel a lot worse than us.
All right. We're due for a final break. We'll come back right after that and wrap up another edition of Jaguars This Week, live from Latitude 30. Joseph?
Thank you, Brian. The Jaguars Rewards Program is now better than ever. Season ticket owners get all the great premium benefits like Teal Deals and the great gas redemption program, but now it's open to all Jaguars fans. Get great discounts, cash back, and register to win a trip to the Super Bowl. Visit Jaguars.com and click on the Jaguars Rewards logo to start earning your rewards today. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, continues on Jaguars Radio. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gates. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gates today. Brian Sexton.
Okay, you're the baseball guy. So you've got the two National League series are complete today already. And you have the...
They're finished, but they're not complete.
Well, no, that's right, man. I'm sorry. They're finished. You have the Giants won and the Cardinals won. Not that that matters to our conversation here. But you've got the Orioles and the Yankees that are in the bottom of the first with no score, and then the Tigers and Athletics. What's the story? What's it looking like here with the Jaguars game in Oakland potentially being moved? What are the scenarios?
What's the deal,
you know?
Joey?
If you don't want it moved, you want Detroit to win.
Is that the only
Can
thing?
They win tonight?
No, that is not the only way it could happen. The A's could win, but Baltimore could beat the Yankees, and that means Oakland and Baltimore would play each other, but Baltimore would be the home team, meaning Game 7 would be in Baltimore, not Oakland.
I got
Why
you.
Would what's the Yankees have a better record than Baltimore? Why would the Orioles have a home field advantage over Oakland and not the Yankees?
They won. The A's won the division as well.
So did the
they
Yankees.
They would get the home team.
Against the Yankees or against the Orioles? I think you got me now. Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Well, here's what I'm reading.
All right, whatever.
It says Tigers get their second chance to advance to ALCS.
That's the best way. If the Tigers win,
can they win
it's
it tonight?
Over.
Can they win it tonight?
That's tonight, right?
Oh, there you go. Okay,
the reason we're talking about this is because if it could be a scenario where the Jaguars game at Oakland next weekend could get moved to Monday night. And we're all just selfish because we don't want to go and have a Monday night game in Oakland.
I'll be rooting for you guys if that happens.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I'll be watching closely and...
We just, you know, because then it'd be, you know, a Monday night West Coast game is a nightmare.
I would be okay with that because it would be the only Jaguar game I could watch live.
And well, as long as it's good for you.
Thank you.
That'd be good
very
for
much.
Tony. What's good for Tony is good for Tony.
But what it really means is landing at, you know, sunrise or shortly thereafter.
And get a cup of coffee and go to work.
To get ready to go to Green Bay.
We've all done that, though.
To get ready to go
more
to Green
than
Bay.
Once. But anyway, just wanted
it's
to
not going to happen. I think the Tigers are going to beat the A's. So it doesn't matter.
Well, we hope that one's
okay,
taken
go
off
Tigers.
The table.
Verlander will pitch game five. It'll be over.
I hope that one is off the table. You know, one of the things that happens when the Jaguars get beat, as they have the last 2 weeks, is we don't really talk about much else that's going on in the league. But from a divisional standpoint, how big is the loss of Brian Cushing, who tore his ACL on Monday Night Football and is now gone for the season for Houston?
It's big. It's not a disaster, though. It's not. It's big because he's a Pro Bowl All-Pro. I think he's an All-Pro linebacker. He is dynamic every down linebacker. Good in the pass. I mean, he's a very good player. But they are so good up front, and they have a good back half. And then offensively, the way they can control the clock, it doesn't change the fact that I still think they're the best team in the AFC.
They're still
really,
really good.
Teams can overcome one guy being out.
Yes.
Well, look what they did last year. They only had.
But, you know, the one thing, though, that you got to consider, D'Amico Ryan's gone in free agency, so it's not like they just put D'Amico Ryan's in there and then they don't miss a beat.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a drop-off.
The loss of Brian Cushing it's not huge, but it's significant.
It hurts, but it's not a disaster.
Well, but keep this in mind. And the first thought that I had was that stat that you and I used during the game. Last year, they had Andre Johnson, Arian Foster, and Matt Schaub on the field for 4.3% of their plays together. Right, their number one receiver, their number one runner, and their quarterback were on the field for 35 snaps.
And they went to the second round of the playoffs.
Exactly. So this is a team, obviously, that's very well coached, and they overcame the loss of those three
and
players. We'll see what it means.
They're a team with a ton of talent.
And a coach who almost got fired a year and a half ago.
That's amazing.
I mean, it's...
And they brought in Wade
Phillips. That's how the league can change.
Here's the thing, though. Did we or anybody else think that they had a ton of talent a couple years ago?
Yeah, I did.
You could see them.
You knew they had talent.
I thought they.
You could see them accruing some players here and there.
I thought they were underachievers 2 years ago.
There you go. That's the right word.
But okay. I thought they were talented.
But, I mean, we didn't think
had this kind of defense.
No.
I mean, they didn't have J.J. Watt.
They didn't have J.J. Watt.
Right.
Connor Barwin was a rookie, and Brooks Reed, whatever his name was just coming on.
J.J. Watt was, even though he didn't have a huge number of sacks the other night.
Oh, he was dominant.
He was great.
He's really good.
I'm not sure he's the best best defensive end.
I think he's
three,
the best defensive lineman in football.
Right now he is, but he's not the best of all time, like Jeff said.
I didn't say he was the best all time.
You quote-unquote said he is the best 3-4 defensive end in our generation.
He's one of the best in our generation,
positive,
period.
Jeff.
That was positive. He is not. No, he's not.
You know, since we're talking about great defensive linemen in all time, Alex Karras passed today.
Yeah, he did. Kidney failure.
Yeah, and you know, look, he retired in 1970, so none of us saw him play.
No, but you know what, though? I
watched him on Webster.
I just remember as a kid, you know, when we used to play football cards on the carpet.
Yep.
And you'd line them up, and, you know, you get, like, you know, half-inch moves, you know, you get to count them out. I don't know if you guys ever did that. Once your card covered up, your buddy's card, he was blocked. And so anyway, I remember as a kid, I mean, Alex Karras's card seems like came in every deck.
Yeah.
Because he was that popular of a player. So, I mean, that was one of my first football card memories was Alex Karras.
And if you ever read the book Instant Replay by Jerry Kramer.
Yes, I have.
A great book where Kramer matched up against Alex Karras a lot, and a lot of the book was about the one-on-one matchup with him. And, you know, in the first game that season, the Packers lost to Detroit, and Kramer tells this great anecdote about how when he came home, his son or his daughter goes, "Dad, do you like Alex Karras, I mean, as a person?" And I think the anecdote was, "Shut up."
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
It was, you know, but it's part of football lore. If you grew up when we grew up sort of reading about football, Alex Karras is the guy.
A lot of people feel like he should have been a Hall of Famer, never was, but that he had that type of career.
Well, you know why. He had the stain against his name for the 64 season where he was suspended by the commissioner.
He and Paul Hornung, who got
in. For gambling.
For gambling, yeah. And so he never made it past that.
Yeah, he's probably
one of the greatest players not to be in the Hall.
Yeah.
Well, didn't he write another book, too, Alex Karras? He had another book.
He did write a book. It was a really, really good book.
What was it called?
I can't remember.
I've got it.
I read it, but I can't remember it. And for a football book, it was good. It was revealing.
Anyway, I got it, and it was just really good. I read it a couple years ago.
Well, as those guys from that era start to pass, the great one, it's worth mentioning because, you know, most of the kids today, who's Alex Karras? And he really was one of those, you know, like a Merlin Olsen.
There's kids today saying, who's Tony Baselli?
Where?
Right.
They do.
I mean, they live in his own house. They say, well, that's just dad.
I was just saying, my kids do that.
That's just dad.
It's how fast and fleeting, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it changes. It changes overnight.
You're working this weekend. You're hunting this
weekend.
I'm
working, yes.
What are you doing, big fella?
I'm forwarding Logman my emails.
No, you're not.
No, I'm, you know, my son's got a tennis tournament. We'll be doing that. And, you know, basically trying to recharge. I mean,
will you turn the TV on Sunday? Or will you just avoid it knowing you've got 11 more weeks of it?
I'll have it on. Yeah.
The red zone, though, right?
I'll have it on in some capacity. I won't immerse myself in it. It is good to get a break. I'll follow it.
I'll be immersed.
I can't help it. I'll always watch it. I love.
You be back by Sunday?
No, I'll be watching football tomorrow night.
I mean, can't wait so
long. I'm a huge NFL fan.
I'm a junkie.
But I don't need
most weeks I am too. But
I don't need a break from the NFL. I need a break just from the Jaguars. Just
from where they
are.
Just
give me 4 days to recharge my batteries.
All right.
And
folks,
I'm good.
As you come down to Latitude 30, October's great special is buy one, get one free bowling. $1 games of bowling. Monday to Friday, 11 to 4. So come on in for lunch and bowl. Buy one, get one free here at Latitude 30. Have a great weekend, everybody.